Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to the Horticulture Week podcast. I'm Rachel Forsyth, senior reporter at Hort Week, and today I'm joined by Kim Wilkie. Kim works as a strategic and conceptual landscape consultant, and we'll delve into exactly what that means today. But it's work that has taken him all over the world, from France to the USA, from Oman right back to England and to Hampshire, where he is now based. I believe you're still based there, Kim?
Yes. Trying to farm as well as be a landscape architect.
Amazing. And what kind of animals are you working with?
Longhorn cattle and then lots of poultry, ducks and turkeys and chickens.
Oh, beautiful. So I grew up on a farm, so this is speaking to my heart here. Can you tell us a little bit more about being a strategic and conceptual landscape consultant? What does that involve?
Everything has to start with land and water. And so for most projects now, planners ask for them to be landscape-led. And I think there's a bit of confusion about what landscape-led means. But for me, it's looking at the soil, the topography, the way that water has formed the shape of the land, and then also understanding the human history and the stories that go along with that land. So you come to any site with a picture of how everything has evolved over the last several thousand years, and then that suggests where it goes forward next. And so in terms of strategic and conceptual work, it's working with that deep understanding of the land and allowing any changes to it to be framed with that history, but also with all of the needs of the present and the future.
Beautiful. And you've written a book which discusses some of the projects that you've worked on within this realm of work. What does it sort of look to explore? Give me your elevator pitch, if you will. What does the book explore and what are some of the projects you kind of discuss within that?
Well, the book is called Led by the Land. And it is, I hope, showing how all of the work I've done has been led by the land. And so it sort of ranges from the Gulag Archipelago up in the White Sea in the Arctic Circle north of Archangel, right down to projects that I worked on in southern Chile. And in each of them, it's trying to show how soil, water, and human stories have framed the designs that have gone along with that. So the idea is that although one's working within a very big context of several thousand years and several million years of geology, you're always looking forward to how the story can be continued and how new design understands that, but works with our current needs, and then tries to forestall climate crisis into the future.
Do you have any examples of these projects? What were you doing in the Arctic, for example?
The Arctic Circle one is really amazing. It's a little cluster of islands where the Earth's crust is quite thin. So you do get heat coming up from under the Earth. And those islands have been sacred for about 5,000 years. So there are spirals of stones and cairns where people from Japan, Vikings, all over the world visited those islands. And then it became the main monastery, one of the most sacred monasteries in Russia for the old believers. And they managed to build this settlement that where 6 months of the year, it's completely isolated by frozen sea and darkness. And then for the rest of the time, actually you get this spurt of growth. And so as well as being sacred for the Russian Orthodox Church, it was also an extraordinarily fragile environment where harvesting just the right amount of seaweed, not felling any trees, making sure that you've got enough bees to pollinate the vegetable gardens, and to make not only enough honey, but also enough wax for the 6 months of darkness. And also then draining sufficient meadows to have sufficient cattle to produce sufficient dung that you can fertilize the vegetables and make hay. So it's just amazing fragile environment. And then the with the Russian Revolution, it was actually the start of the Gulag Archipelago. So it was where everyone, the intellectuals were sent, and then under Stalin became one of the most vicious penal colonies that's ever existed, as recorded by Solzhenitsyn. So my task there was to say, how do we take this World Heritage Site forward as something where it is a very fragile environment, it is a sacred environment, there are these terrible memories, and it needs an economy from tourism. So how do you match all of those together and raise funds from around the world to make it happen? So that was a very long way of answering what that project involved. But in some ways, it kind of encapsulates everything I've been talking about.
You have worked all over the world in so many different locations. Is there anything that you sort of bring back to the UK that you've learned from those other countries? Or equally, is there anything that the UK could teach other countries?
Well, that's really interesting, because in the 18th century, there was this moment when England in particular developed the English landscape movement, which was a very different way of approaching landscape and the natural world. And it was a moment when, rather than going for very intricate, divinely ordered gardens that had been pioneered by the Italians, the French, and the Dutch, the English split away and went for much more naturalistic landscapes, where just the celebration of a well-farmed land was seen as beautiful in itself. And so the vistas stopped focusing on statues of Louis XIV and opened up into actively productive farmland, based much more on the concepts of the Roman poets of the first century before Christ. And so an actively productive landscape was seen as beautiful for its own sake. And that then changed into the picturesque movement, which was focused much more on how cute it looked, and then exported around the continent and the world as the English garden movement, which was slightly a bit of a change and a travesty from what the original concept was. But I'm afraid lawns and golf courses and picturesque landscapes are something that have emerged from a mistranslation of the English landscape movement. But that contact with man as part of the natural environment and well-farmed land is something that is really working successfully here and across in the United States. And I think there is a whole surge of movement for farming land well with natural systems and with wildlife.
Yeah, because when we spoke a few years ago, we found out we had quite a surprising connection because you were telling me about your work with the farm that I was living on at the time. It was Goodwood, wasn't it?
Yes.
So you're still undertaking that sort of work?
Yes, and interestingly now combining it with designs for new towns and extensions of existing towns.
So connecting those two?
Yes, so that the surrounding farmland is completely integrated with with new development and new settlement. So you get meadows and market gardens and allotments and orchards being an integral part of any new settlement and producing both food and multifunctional landscapes that are good for wildlife, good for the soil, absorb water, and are really enjoyable to walk through. So I think that integration of cities with well-farmed land is what's happening now.
Yeah, and I hope Goodwood is still doing an exceptional job.
Of course it is, yes. Well, they really pioneered organic farming a long time ago.
Yeah, it was something that drew my father to the farm in the first place, so that's great to hear. And you've also spoken previously about the power of grass, really, for carbon capture. Is that something you're still quite, you know, passionate about?
Yes, very, very much so. I think looking at carbon in isolation is missing half the point. You need to look at how you manage soil and water well as capturing carbon. And counterintuitively, flood meadows grazed by cattle sequester carbon into the ground faster and more permanently than any amount of woodland or any other form of carbon capture. So actually deep-rooted herbal lay flood meadow grassland grazed by cows is one of the best ways of sequestering carbon and incredibly rich in wildlife, good for water storage and water purification, and produces food. So some very nice synergies there. And the more one thinks of all of these things together, rather than how do we clean water or how do we capture carbon or how do we increase biodiversity, I think if you farm the land or manage the land well with long-term stewardship, it addresses all of these things simultaneously.
Which is lovely. I feel like cows have got quite a bad rep in the carbon climate crisis, but it's nice to hear that they can do their part. Is that something you're doing on your own farm as well?
Yes, it is. Yes. And I'm mystified by the campaign against cows. What I absolutely endorse is factory farming should be stopped as soon as possible. It is disastrous. And the huge American feedlots and the felling of the Amazon rainforest for soya to feed cattle is completely wrong. But raising cows on deep herbal lays in climates like these northern climates where grass grows really well, and integrating that with wildlife and soil protection seems completely the right way to go. So if only the campaign were to stop factory farming and give cows a better life, it would be much more resonant.
Yeah, absolutely. And is that one of the biggest critical changes you think we kind of need to make when it comes to tackling the climate crisis, or is there other things that we need to be focusing on?
I actually think industrial farming is at the root of the problem. And as soon as we revert to the idea that soil and farming is about biology and not just about chemistry, and that the quality of the food and the microbial health of the soil and the food is key to climate change, to human health, to biodiversity. We just need to reframe how we're looking at things. And industrial farming, I think, is the root of all evil.
Well, I can't disagree with you there. I think for some people, though, bringing it back to sort of more of a individual human level, some people feel sort of quite overwhelmed knowing what they can do. Do you have any advice for them, or even, you know, small businesses who really want to make these changes, but they're just struggling to know where to start, maybe?
I think the difficulty is if one tries to solve all of the planetary issues on your own, you're going to feel just swamped. I think making just sensible choices about what you eat, making sure that it does come from a sustainable way of growing food, of growing as much food as you can yourself if you're interested in it, of not wasting water, not wasting plastics and things like that. I think it's just, in the way that we were saying the secret to climate change is farming well, I think the secret to each of us doing the right thing is living well, not living irresponsibly. And I think an awful lot of that comes down to instinct and choice rather than hair shirt sacrifices. It's just a question of being sensible, I think.
Yeah, that's really nicely put. Fantastic. That's been so interesting. That just leaves me with our last question, which we always ask our guests. What plant would you take to a desert island?
Well, yeah, you did warn me about this. And I have to say, I've always been perplexed by this desert island concept, because I think it's based on Robinson Crusoe. And so it's actually a tropical island rather than a desert island. And I think what they mean is a deserted island. So I'm actually going to flip it back to where we started with the Solov Key and the Gulag Archipelago in the White Sea, and say that if one is at the edge of environmental fragility and trying to survive on a deserted island, the way that they harvested and protected seaweed up in the Arctic Circle was absolutely magnificent. So my plant would be seaweed, if it counts as a plant at all.
Yeah, I love that. I've not heard that one before, but I think that's very clever. You'll probably have a thriving community there in no time, Kim.
Okay.
Well, a huge thank you to Kim. Thank you so much for joining us today. It's been really interesting. I'm Rachel Forsyth, and this has been the Horticulture Week podcast. Make sure you never miss one. Subscribe or follow Horticulture Week podcasts via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or your preferred podcast platform. If you are interested in producing a podcast with Horticulture Week, email us at hortweek@haymarket.com. And a huge thank you again to Kim. Goodbye for now.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to Quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.